This is the Afternoon Magazine on WILL AM 580. I'm Celeste Quinn. Thanks for tuning in today. As a young woman, Julia Child couldn't cook, nor could she speak a word of French. Well, that's a bit of an exaggeration. She wanted desperately to cook for her husband, Paul, but early in their marriage, dinners were, in her words, satisfactory, but they took hours of laborious effort to produce. The first meal she cooked for Paul Child, brains simmered in red wine. That was a disaster. Well, how was it then that she would become one of the authors of Mastering the Art of French Cooking? How did Julia Child become public television's much-loved The French Chef? On the program today, the story of Julia Child's transformation. Our guest is writer Alex Prudhomme, a grandnephew of Paul Child. He assisted Julia Child in writing her final book, a memoir, My Life in France. Julia Child died in her sleep on August 13, 2004. She died of kidney failure, 2 days shy of her 92nd birthday. The book, My Life in France, is about the years Julia and Paul Child spent in Paris and Marseille. It focuses on the years 1948 through 1954, years she described as among the best of her life. Listeners, I invite you to join the conversation this afternoon with your questions and comments. You can join us with a telephone call. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area is 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, if it would be a long-distance call, call us toll-free. The toll-free number, 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. Let me tell you a bit more about our guest. Alex Prudhomme is a freelance writer. His work has appeared in publications including The New York Times and The New Yorker. He is the author of The Cell Game and co-author of Forewarned. The book he helped his great-aunt write, My Life in France, is published by Knopf. 333-9455 and 800-222-9455. Alex, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thanks, Celeste. Glad to be here.
Yeah. In the introduction, Julia Child describes the differences between herself and her husband. He was older, sophisticated. He knew about foods that to her were exotic. Would you tell us about their backgrounds and what drew them together?
Well, they met in the OSS, the Office of Strategic Services, which is the precursor to the CIA, during World War II in Ceylon, which is now Sri Lanka. Paul was an artist who was there doing secret work for Lord Mountbatten. He was producing giant maps of the Japanese positions, and he was creating secret war rooms where Mountbatten and his generals planned strategy. And Julia always liked to say with a wink and a grin that she was involved in the spy business, with the implication that maybe she was a spy. But somehow I don't think she would have blended in too well. She was actually a typist. She was handling top secret material, things the agents sent in from the field. And one of the interesting things about that job is it taught her not only how to type, but how to be very organized and somewhat secretive about the work she was doing. And when they met in 1944, it was not love at first sight. Julia thought Paul was a little too bald and had an ugly mustache and a big nose. Paul thought that Julia was loud and hysterical and somewhat wacky. Their love blossomed in the tropics, and by 1946, they were married. And Paul, as you indicated, Paul was older than Julia. He was 10 years older. He was a sophisticated man. He had lived in France in the 20s, where he was a teacher and an artist. He was fluent in French. He was a gourmand. He was a wine expert. And when he was offered a job with the U.S. Information Service in the U.S. Embassy in Paris, he jumped at the chance. And Julia, as she says, went along as his extra baggage and had never been to France, really hardly spoke a word, knew how to cook pancakes, but that was about it, and was actually intimidated by France. Father was a conservative businessman in Pasadena, California, where she was raised in an upper-middle-class household with the staff and They had cooks and so on, and she had never really spent much time in the kitchen and had no reason to. Her father mistrusted all Europeans, but especially the French, who we considered to be dirty and conniving. And so we opened the book in November of 1948, mm-hmm. when Julie and Paul have taken the SS America from New York to Le Havre, and they arrive off the coast of France on a foggy morning, and they're looking at the twinkling lights along the shore, and Julia is full of trepidation, and she's sort of thinking to herself, what have I gotten myself into? This crazy husband has taken me to France, where the men are going to twirl their mustaches and pinch my derriere, and the women are going to be impossibly chic and snobbish, and here I am, this giant, unformed, 36-year-old Californian. What am I doing? And then on their drive from Le Havre to Paris in their big Buick station wagon, they stop in Rouen for lunch. And Julia has a transformative experience at La Couronne, which means the crown, and it's the oldest restaurant in France. And she has sole meuniere, and she has wine for lunch for the first time, and she has a salad verte, and she has café filtre, and she just falls in love with that first meal, not only with the food, but also with the seriousness with which the waiters and the maitre d' take themselves and take food, the pleasant ambiance of the dining room, the wonderful smells coming from the kitchen. It's the whole experience, and that's capped off by their drive through the lovely French countryside. And so by the time she gets to Paris for the very first time, she already sort of considers herself French.
Yeah, she's smitten.
Yeah.
Yeah, she loves it.
And when I got her to talk about that, she kind of went into a semi-trance-like state. She sort of went back to that moment, you know, over 50 years ago, and was reliving it as she was telling it to me. And it was really a remarkable moment, because she often referred to those early days in France as the moment when she, as she said, divorced her father, committed herself to Paul in France, and began her real life as an adult.
Mm. Well, the two of you did a marvelous job on this book.
Thank you.
I hear Julia Child's voice. You can hear her enthusiasm. You can hear her joy. You can hear her love of all things French. What was it like for you talking with your great aunt about all the memories that she had of her time with Paul in France?
It was great. It was fun because we were getting to know each other again at the end of her life. Even though I'd known her my whole life, spending intense periods with her working on this book and reliving the favorite years of her life was a remarkable experience, and I'm very grateful to her. And memory is an interesting thing. Here she was, 91 years old. Her health was really up and down when we started work on this book. And sometimes she had a hard time remembering what had happened, you know, the day before. But she could remember events from 50 years ago very clearly. And the way her mind worked, she could remember meals. She could remember the flavors of certain sauces. She could remember, you know, cuts of meat that the butcher sold her. She couldn't always remember the weather or people's faces or what a house looked like that she had lived in, things like that. And one of the great resources we had in writing this book were letters that she and Paul wrote to my grandparents while they were living in France. Paul was the twin brother of my grandfather, Charlie Child. And like most twins, they had a sort of secret language, and so when I started to read these letters, it took me a while to decode what they were talking about. But the family kept these letters, and Paul and Julia would write every single week from Paris or Marseille, and it was like having a running diary. It was really a remarkable resource for us. So when Julia couldn't remember something or we had a hard time getting going, I'd read her little sections of the letters, and suddenly she would say, oh, I remember that day when we walked along the Seine River and the light was sparkling on the water, and then we walked up to Sacré-Cœur, and she'd be off on a story like that. And so I had to always carry a notebook and a pen with me, because you never knew when a story would come out of her.
Mm. This is the Afternoon Magazine. Our guest this afternoon is Alex Brudholm. He's a writer, and with his great aunt, he and his great aunt, Julia Child, they wrote a memoir of Julia's time with her husband Paul Child in France, My Life in France. The book is published by Knopf. It's just out, newly published. This is the Afternoon Magazine, and listeners, I invite you to join us this afternoon with your questions for our guest, Alex Prudhomme. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. 333-WILL, 800-222-WILL. We have a couple of listeners who would like to talk with you now, Alex. So let's talk with a first caller this afternoon, line one, listener in Champaign. Hi.
Hello.
Hi there.
I'm sorry to jump ahead, but there's something that I'm dying to ask about. There was
sure.
an NPR report years ago, and they were crediting Julia Child with all kinds of accomplishments, and among them was the invention of something called shark repellent, which I remember from like a Batman movie. Is there any validity to this? I'm just curious.
Good
By
question.
The way, she was greatest chef ever.
Before Julia was shipped off to Southeast Asia with the OSS, she did work with a group developing techniques for downed airmen to protect themselves while in the water and to identify themselves to the rescue planes. And so she helped to develop a little mirror that they would bring with them that they could use to reflect and then signal to a rescue plane. She also worked in what she called the fish squeezing unit, which meant they would squeeze fish with the idea of getting some oils out of them in order to produce a shark repellent. And I was curious about that story also, and I asked her about it. And she loved to talk about the fish squeezing unit, but she couldn't remember whether or not they actually succeeded in their quest. And that's one of the many questions that were left hanging between us.
That's great.
Sadly. Thanks so much. But maybe the Spy Museum in Washington, D.C. would be able to answer that.
Let's talk with another listener. A caller in Pekin on line four. Good afternoon.
Yeah, hi, good afternoon. A very interesting show again. You're jogging distant memories for me, so I had a quick question for you. Back when I was a little boy in the late 50s, early 60s, my mother taught herself to cook by watching a TV show. The gentleman's name was Pope, and I don't remember his first name, but anyway, she loved this guy to death. And I just was wondering, in her all of her associations and her contacts, if Julia Child ever had any dealings with this gentleman, if she thought anything of him, if, you know, there was any correspondence there, I guess going back to the 50s or 60s. And since I'm on the cell, I'll go ahead and ring off.
Okay.
I have no idea, to tell you the truth. I've never heard of this guy. But, you know, the food world back then was pretty small. And when Julia's first book, Mastering the Art of French Cooking, was published in 1961, she and her collaborator, Simca Beck, came to New York, where there was a famous party held for the entire food community. At that point, it was about 20 people, at the restaurant of a woman named Dionne Lucas, who had a TV show and was a French chef. And James Beard had sort of organized this party and gave a wonderful toast at which he said, you know, I love this book, and I only wish I'd written it myself. And it happened that Craig Claiborne, the New York Times critic, was there that night, and he wrote the book up and gave it a rave review. And then Julia and Simca did their own little book tour across the country. Back then, publishers didn't really do book tours, and that's how it began. And they got a wonderful reception right off the start, and it's remarkable because that book, Mastering the Art of French Cooking, is still in print 44 years later. And I have to believe that if Mr. Pope was on the East Coast at that time, he would have been at that party, and I don't recognize his name. But there was a young French chef there that night named Jacques Pepin, who some of you may recognize. He is now a very well-regarded chef who did a TV series with Julia. You know, literally the entire food world in 1961 was about 20, 25 people, and it was the era of, you know, a meal in a can, and everything had to be quick, and it was iceberg lettuce and Jell-O. And so the book that Julia and Simca had produced was really counterintuitive. But I think it struck a nerve. I mean, partly because Americans had grown more sophisticated with more money and more travel after the war. The Kennedys were in the White House. They had a French chef. Americans were ready for something new, and it just happened that Julian Simca had exactly what they were looking for.
Yeah. A little bit like that party coming together in New York City with Jacques Pepin, Craig Claiborne, James Beard.
It was sort of one of those Zelig moments where everybody was there.
Yeah, so it was a small world, but wow.
Yeah, and that's why I think you could never have another Julia, really, because the world around people like that has changed so much now. You know, they didn't have television, really. There certainly weren't too many cooking shows in 61. There was Dion Lucas had had one and Jim Beard had had one, but neither had been very successful. Mm. And I think partly because they didn't have that sort of crazy genius that Julia had, and also partly because the country wasn't ready for it.
Yeah. You know, when we started, you were talking about her work in the OSS and her skills at organization and the need for secrecy.
Mm-hmm.
And both of these things played out beautifully in Mastering the Art of French Cooking.
She was, I think, for me, the thing that is the key to Julia's success is a combination, a very unusual combination of this organizational ability that she had, which includes, you know, very hard work behind the scenes, lots of preparation, rehearsal, learning technique, trying recipes over and over and over and over again until she'd gotten them right and made all the mistakes possible, combined with this wonderfully expansive personality, you know, terrific humor, natural comedic timing, where she just lights up a TV and makes everybody feel at ease and that, you know, that cooking isn't that hard after all. And it was a wonderful combination. And the secrecy part is also kind of funny. One of the things we've included in the book is a facsimile of some of Julia's original recipes. She developed methods for making hollandaise and mayonnaise and beurre blanc in the home kitchen that were unique, and she was afraid that before publication someone else would find out and print them. And she sent these recipes from France to her sister and to her friends here in the States to try out at home and see if they could make them with American ingredients. And in the one we've reproduced, which was to her sister, she's written all over it, you know, top secret, confidential, you know, your eyes only upon pain of death. And it's very funny, but it's also kind of serious. She, you know, she was very determined to do a breakthrough book, and she knew she was onto something even early on, even after being accepted and then rejected by two other publishers before Knopf finally published the book. And she took this secrecy thing pretty seriously.
Yeah, for your eyes only. Now, tell us about Judith Jones and how, with her guidance, Mastering the Art of French Cooking eventually was published.
Well, it's a great story, and in the book we go through the trials and tribulations that Julia and Simca and Loisette, the three authors of Mastering the Art of French Cooking, had to go through to get published. It took them 9 years of really hard work and acceptance and rejection, and they just kept plowing along. And in 1960, the manuscript landed on the desk of just the right person to publish this book, just almost by luck. The person was Judith Jones, who was a young editor at Knopf, who, it turned out, had lived in Paris at about the same time that Paul and Julia had, had also learned to cook in the French way and learned to love the French markets, and had come back to the States and gotten a job at Knopf, and the manuscript landed on her desk, and she immediately, and at this point, their manuscript was something like 750 pages long. It was this huge, detailed treatise on every aspect of French cooking, and most people sort of scoffed at that, but Judith sort of had a eureka moment. She had been looking for just this book and had been unable to find it. She took it home, and she cooked some of the recipes, tried it out on her friends, thought about it, and figured this was the one. This was a classic. And she then had to convince the somewhat curmudgeonly Alfred Knopf, the head of the publishing house, to actually publish this book. And his attitude in 1960 was that, well, any real French chef, first of all, has to be a man, and second of all, had to be French. I mean, who is this Julia, whatever her name was, from Smith College, and her two friends? What do they know? But Judith persisted and won him over, and then when Judith suggested this title, Mastering the Art of French Cooking, Alfred sort of scoffed and said, well, if anybody buys a book with that title, I'll eat my hat. And as Judith says, I like to think he's eaten a lot of hats.
Yeah. Men and French, when it came to thinking of cooks and chefs, that was the stereotype. But now in France, it wasn't long after Julia Child was in Paris with her husband that she signed up for a class. Actually, it wound up being a more serious class than she had thought she was signing up for at Le Cordon Bleu. How did she get in, and were there many women in France involved in the study of fine food preparation?
Well, it was interesting because not many French women were wonderful chefs. There were, of course, a few professional cooks who happened to be women, like La Mère Michel, who ran a restaurant that specialized in beurre blanc. And we tell the story about how Julia went and sort of spied on her and discovered her beurre blanc recipe and and then made it her own. And, it's funny. By and large, the chefs in France in that era were men. And Julia had been living in France for a little over a year when she had finally gotten to the point where she could speak some French, had been shopping like a madwoman, going to restaurants with Paul and their friends, and really had fallen in love with French food and decided, you know, I've got to learn how to do this myself. And signed up at the Cordon Bleu, which is probably the most famous cooking school in the world, and ended up in a class in the basement of the school in which she was the only woman. She was with 11 former U.S. GIs who were there on the GI Bill learning to cook. She was the only woman. She was a good head or two taller than most of them. She was by far the most serious cook in the group. And their teacher was a wonderful guy named Chef Max Bougnard, who was of the old school, had studied under Escoffier, and had worked, had his own restaurant before the war, and wonderful character, sort of the archetype of the French chef. And his photograph you'll see in the book, he looks a little bit like a walrus, big mustache and round glasses. And he really mentored Julia. He understood that she was very serious about this endeavor and took her under his wing, taught her not only how to cook wonderful dishes, but also how to shop in the French manner, which meant really speaking to the people in the market and learning what was good rather than just grabbing whatever you saw in front of you. And he also taught her how to teach. Unlike a lot of people in the food world today, Julia never saw herself as a business person. She always saw herself as a teacher of cookery. And she learned a lot of her sort of craft from Bougnard, and he would always say, you know, goûter, goûter, which means taste, taste, Madame Child. And he said, remember, have fun, you know, cooking should be fun and should be about love. And she really internalized those lessons and brought them back to the States and used them the rest of her career.
Yeah. You know, this recalls, I'm thinking now about something that she wrote about early in the book when she was speaking of her husband, Paul. His motivation for making paintings and photographs wasn't fame or riches. His pleasure in the act of creating the thing itself was reward enough.
I love that phrase, the thing itself, yeah.
And the two of them, here we see how the two of them are so perfect together.
Well, they really had a symbiotic relationship. It's remarkable that they found each other because they fit so perfectly. And you see this in the letters, the family letters that we used. They, as I said, they used to write every week to my grandparents, and they would sometimes write a letter together, which they would sign JP or Puglia, as if they were two sides of one person. Or if they wrote individual letters, they would make little comments about each other. You know, Julia would circle something Paul had said, and she would write in the margin, "I completely disagree with him about this." It's very funny. Julia's letters were short and typewritten and full of exclamation points. Paul's were handwritten, often 6 or 7 pages long, very descriptive. Taking the two together, it was a very complementary bunch of information. One of the other ways that they were symbiotic that I always liked is that Paul's job at the USIS was cultural, but it was also propagandistic, and his job was essentially to sell America to the French and to Europe during the Cold War, when they really believed that the Russians were about to start marching down the Champs-Élysées, and there was a big communist presence in Paris in those days. And his job was really to use what we now call soft power to persuade the French that we were actually a cultured, worthwhile ally rather than a bunch of invaders. And later, Julia's job was, in fact, to sell France to the States through cooking. And again, another one of those little symmetries that I like.
Yeah. The photographs that you've included are wonderful that Paul took in
Yeah,
France.
He had a real eye. You know, he was a diplomat, but I think he was really an artist. And he was a wonderful painter, and he was a wonderful photographer. And it's fun to look at the old pictures of Paris because it's very much of that era. On the other hand, Paris hasn't changed all that much over the years. And it's just he somehow evokes that feeling of you're being there.
Let's pause here on the Afternoon Magazine. I've got to interrupt here with some weather information. The National Weather Service in Lincoln has issued a severe thunderstorm warning for southeastern Champaign County and southwestern Vermilion County in east central Illinois until 2:15 central time this afternoon. At 1:27, National Weather Service Doppler radar indicated a severe thunderstorm capable of producing nickel-sized hail and damaging winds in excess of 60 miles per hour. This storm was located near Fairmount, or about 16 miles west of Danville, and was moving east at 10 miles per hour. Locations in the line in the path of this storm include Fairmount, Oakwood, and Catlin. Other locations in the warning include Fithian, Indianola, Jamaica, and Seidel. This is a dangerous storm, repeating a severe thunderstorm warning for southeastern Champaign County and southwestern Vermilion County in east central Illinois until 2:15 central daylight time this afternoon. And a severe thunderstorm warning continues for southeastern Iroquois County in east central Illinois and central Benton County in northwestern Indiana until 1:45 central daylight time this afternoon. Stay tuned to AM 580 for the latest on the weather. This is the Afternoon Magazine. I'm Celeste Quinn. On the program today, the story of Julia Child's transformation. Our guest is writer Alex Prudhomme, a grandnephew of Paul Child. He assisted Julia Child in writing her final book, a memoir, My Life in France. The book is published by Knopf. Listeners, you can join us this afternoon with a question or a comment. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. 333-WILL, 800-222-WILL. It seems, Alex, it seemed that Julia Child made friends very easily in France, and the people come alive here in the pages of the book, from the jolly olive man to the vegetable woman to the people that she got to know, the women who they were called the gourmets.
Yes, the Cercle des Gourmets, yeah. A French culinary group for women. Yes, you know, Julia was the great communicator, as anybody who's seen her TV show can attest. She just loved people, and she couldn't stand it in the beginning when they got there, and she wasn't able to communicate. And she always said to me that she learned how to speak French by marketing, and that it was the guys, you know, in the vegetable stalls and the meat purveyors and the fish people that really taught her how to speak French you know, through gossip and through recipes and through buying produce, And this is where Bunyar's teaching about how to shop in the French way really helped her because, you know, in America, we go into a supermarket and we grab a piece of meat that's wrapped in plastic and we buy it, and the whole transaction takes about 3 minutes. In France, Bunyar taught Julia, you have to go in and you have to talk to the meat purveyor. You have to ask him about the weather and about his daughter, and then you get around to asking about what cuts of meat he recommends and how he likes to prepare them. And this takes a lot longer. It takes about 45 minutes. But in the meantime, you've developed a personal bond, and he will then select a very nice cut of meat for you. And if you don't do that, he'll just give you something that's of lesser quality and will probably charge you too much for it. And she used to laugh about that the French were very perceptive and socially aware. And she really loved that. And as a great communicator, she appreciated that because it was much more than just the transaction. It was the personal communication. And she took that and used it in every aspect of her life, whether it was making friends, such as a group of art historians that she and Paul used to spend time with who were all French, or, you know, meeting expats, or talking to the ambassador or the movie stars down at the Cannes Film Festival. Wherever she went, she was a dive-into-life, head-first type of a person. Mm. And she was that way till the very end. I mean, when I would visit her in California to do my interviews with her, I remember, you know, we'd go out to the farmer's market, and she'd want to talk to every single olive guy and strawberry lady in the marketplace, and she'd try everything. And then she'd want to go to the cat show, the local cat show, so I would take her there, and she'd want to pick up every single cat in the cat show. And it was always really fun and exciting to be with Julia because you never knew what you'd end up doing.
Yeah. What a love of life, a love of living. And, you know, maybe that's what made her part of her French, really. And you know, we could learn so much from what you've just said, and if we tried to incorporate that into our lives. Before we go on, another weather warning, flash flood warning for southern Iroquois County in east central Illinois until 4:30 p.m. Central Daylight Time. At 1:21 Central Time, flooding was reported from a thunderstorm in the Milford area. Flash flood warning for southern Iroquois County until 4:30 Central Time. Let's take another call now. A listener in Casey, line one. Hi.
Hi, and my name is Julia also. And Mr. Prudhomme, I'm so glad you've written this book, and I can't wait to get it. I think you're right, Celeste. Julia is still a role model for us. And things that you've written in this book, Mr. Prudhomme, will just reinforce that. When I was about 21 or so in 1964, I first saw Julia on TV, and everything she cooked, I cooked.
That's great. That's a good thing to do.
That's what I cooked, no matter what it was. And it did make it easier for me because I hadn't learned to cook before I left home. I just put on some fried chicken and go off and read a book and think that was it. And my husband was in the Air Force, and it took him a long time to save up the money to buy that book for me for my birthday. And I'm just so sorry that I never wrote to her, because she has been a role model the rest of my life up until now.
Well, I'm glad to hear that, and you're not alone. A lot of people have said that to me, and it's really nice to hear, because I think that's what she set out to do.
Oh.
She really wanted to be a teacher of cookery, and she really wanted to turn people on to the joys of cooking. And she always said, you know, if I can do it, you can do it. And she really meant it. And one thing I would recommend to you is you can get the DVDs of some of the old shows. It's really fun to watch. I've been watching them lately, and they have some of the very early, in fact, the very first one, which was Boeuf Bourguignon, which is really beef stew. And
yeah.
It's in black and white, and she's...
these were black and white.
Yeah, this was in
TV.
1962, and she was, she'd look at the wrong camera, and she was sweating, and she was knocking into things, but she was having so much fun, and the food looked so good that you really just want to step through the TV screen and join her and have a glass of wine and start
exactly.
cooking with her and sit down and eat it.
Yeah.
And, in fact, when I saw this Boeuf Bourguignon show the other night, I got so inspired, I went home and made it, and I have to say, it was really good. So I would recommend that to anybody, is to try to see some of the old shows, because, you know, she's still got a magic spark that I don't think anyone else on television has. And it's a whole combination of things. It's that thing I mentioned earlier about hard work and diligence and organization combined with this humor and so on. Not afraid to make mistakes. You know, she would
exactly.
make mistakes, and then she'd say, "Well, now you can show your guests what a great cook you are by saving it." And she made it fun. You know, she's just having so much fun, and the food looks so good that you just want to jump in there. And I've been doing a lot of cooking from the first two mastering books, partly to become one with my subject as I was writing the book, but also I've rediscovered them. I often cook from the later books. There's a book she wrote called The Way to Cook, which has been wonderful.
Uh-huh.
But
yeah.
I've rediscovered Mastering the Art of French Cooking, and I recommend it to you because there's a lot of wonderful information there that's still valid today, and she still describes it in that very Julia way.
Yeah.
And she coaxes you through things. She'll say, here's the section where if the milk starts to curdle, this is what you do to fix it, or if the butter gets too brown, just do that. And it's really like having a private cooking lesson when you go through it like that.
Well, she not only taught cooking, but she taught about life.
Yes, that's true.
She taught us how to live.
Yep. Well, I recommend our book to you because I think there's a lot of that comes through in this book, My Life in France. It's really her whole approach to life was to be inclusive and to be unpretentious and to just have fun with it. It's true that she taught more than just cooking, that cooking was the vehicle through which she taught about life.
Mm. Yes, very much so. And I was a person who was afraid of doing things wrong.
Yeah.
Especially with cooking. And she changed that for me.
Well, if you look at these shows now, no one ever makes a mistake. And we all know from spending time in the kitchen that, oops, you forget a little ingredient here or your cake implodes over there. And and Julia was unafraid of that. And she almost sometimes courted disaster just to see what would happen. And that's one of the things I love about her. She was always testing the world to see what she could get away with. And Jacques Pepin tells a very funny story about working with her on their series. And they were doing a national book tour once, and it was a live show in front of hundreds of people, and they were supposed to do a somewhat complicated chicken dish. And just as they were about to walk on the stage, Julia whispers to Jacques and says, "I've decided we're going to use turkey today instead." And then they walk out on stage. And I think she was throwing him a curveball to see what he could do with it. And they, of course, a turkey is a different kind of meat. It's a much bigger bird. It requires a different thing and a different set of techniques. And they proceeded, and they made the turkey, and it came out wonderfully. But that was a typical Julia thing to do because she'd probably done the chicken many times and was maybe growing bored of it and wanted to try something new.
Yeah. The old shows, the very early shows, some of them appeared on our companion public television station recently.
Mm.
And I watched them, too, and I thought they were wonderful. And one of the things, though, this was the early days of television, and they had all those horrible lights, and she just rolled with the punches. She'd pick up a roll of paper towels or a towel and blot her face and say,
"Yeah,
whoa,
it's true."
It's hot in here. Whoa,
there's
it's
a funny story
here.
That we tell in the book about when Julia learns how to make French bread, and she's doing the show, and she loses her reading glasses while she's on the set, and she's in the middle of her talk. And she's got different bowls with bread at different points in the rising, and she picks the wrong bowl. But the heat from the lights makes the bread rise faster than it normally would. And she just wings it, and it turns out just right at the very last second. But, again, she's courting disaster but going with it.
Yeah.
And, she says, be fearless, be willing to make mistakes. Don't apologize. Have fun.
Yeah. Well, in the book, She told you at some point, apparently, you know, you're a better cook than you think you are.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And another, I think another message that, that comes through in her television shows is the importance of cooking for others, for entertaining, and she showed us how to do that as well.
Well, I spent time in her kitchen in Cambridge, Massachusetts as a kid, and I'll tell you, it was so much fun because she was very inclusive. She would have everybody in the kitchen sitting around peeling potatoes or slicing apples or whatever it was, and she'd be talking and cooking, and there'd be wonderful smells, and it was a very communal, inclusive experience. And people always feel when they have a dinner party that they ought to have the guests in the dining room, and the chef will be tucked away behind the scenes in the kitchen. And Julia took the opposite approach. She believed that everybody should be involved. It was much more fun. It was more effective and more efficient. And it was part of the experience of the food to work together. And she always said that, you know, her favorite moment was cooking with other people. You see that in the shows and in her books.
Did you cook with her?
Yes. Well, as a kid, she taught us how to make things like lace cookies and pies and fish chowder and bread and all sorts of things. I remember one spectacular meal in the south of France where she and Paul had a house. And I went over there in 1976 when I was 14 years old with my family to visit. And it was the year of the Montreal Olympics, and we were watching the Olympics out on the veranda. They had a little black-and-white TV that Paul had set up, and he loved boxing, and we were watching the Cuban boxer Teofilo Stevenson. And Julia was cooking this wonderful grilled chicken, but on a little tiny grill. I mean, it was probably the smallest grill I've ever seen, and she made the most delicious chicken that ever since then I've wondered what the marinade was because I can still practically taste it.
How about that? The power of food.
It is amazing.
Yeah. There we'll leave it. We've drawn down on the time. We're out of time. Alex, it's just been a pleasure speaking with you this afternoon. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Celeste, and bon appétit.
Bon appétit. The story of Julia Child's transformation, you can read it in the book My Life in France by Julia Child with Alex Prudhomme, our guest this afternoon here on the Afternoon Magazine. The book is published by Knopf.